Welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And this is going to be an interesting one.
This one's coming at you fast. Comfortably fast and with really quite incredible amenities. I mean, honestly, why don't we have long distance, high speed light rail here? This is Bullet Train!
Hi, there's a gun on.
Shh, whoa. It's the quiet car. Gotta use your small inside voice in here, son.
There's a gun.
Talk to me.
I am ready. You are getting the new and improved me. Because if you put peace out in the world, you get peace back.
I think you might be forgetting what you do for a living. Take the gun.
Every job I do, somebody dies. I'm not that guy anymore.
Some conflicts require a gun.
Hey, this is nice. Okay, what am I snatching and or grabbing?
A briefcase.
You said you wanted simple for your first job back.
Doesn't get simpler.
You stab me?
Yeah!
It will ruin your life the way you ruin mine.
Dude, I don't even know you!
There's nothing simple about this job.
Something else going on here?
Yeah, I'm not the only one on this train looking for this case.
Emin, Where's the briefcase?
Oh, it's our ship. It was just there.
We are right on schedule.
Everything that's ever happened to you.
This is gonna sting, bitch!
Oh. Has led you here. Fate.
That's a shit deal.
Oh, no, thank you.
You know what? Do you have anything sparkling? That's the one. Thank you. Domo arigato. You sure you want to talk this out?
Not particularly, no.
Okay.
Really liked this movie. I enjoyed it. It was a ton of fun. It was exciting, entertaining, thoughtful, and all that. But there's something about it that I can't even put my finger on. I worry I'm gonna forget this movie exists in a month.
I could totally see that. I also thoroughly loved it, and I don't see myself having that problem, but. At the same time, a lot of it is such just light action fluff that, I could see how somebody could watch and forget.
Yeah, and like, and all the characters are really cool and fascinating. And as you had said when you pitched the movie, they're all kind of like cliches from other films. It was fun, seeing them pop up and like, oh, who's next? What's gonna happen next? And it was just up to the line of like enough of those. They needed one more, maybe two more, or like the army of henchmen at the end should have just been like a cabin in the woods level of. Avalanche of action cliches all at the end, and it was just damn it, you stuck the landing, you did, but that Soviet girl literally did a perfect display, and by Soviet girl I of course mean, you know, our lady of holy shit films, Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's just like any other year you'd probably be a top 10 action flick, maybe even like top top five or top three action flicks, but you're going up against the perfect one. And like, it has detailed mythology and like metaphysics and philosophy, whereas this one has like a veneer of it. And all I want is more. Don't get me wrong, I want them to have invested more, but it's just like, damn it. You're like Everything Everywhere All at Once light.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I think part of the issue and the reason that you're not really seeing that substance is that this is such a love letter movie. I know in when Double Toast did their review, they talked about how this is a love letter to 90s like Quentin Tarantino movies.
Oh, I didn't really get Quentin Tarantino movies. I got a lot of movies that he certainly had watched.
To me, when I had heard that comment in their review, I couldn't help but think that love, I think it goes further than that. Because this isn't like, I could see the Quentin Tarantino comparison in terms of the trying to be cool, stylish dialogue. But I think there's more than that, because, you know, as I said to you off mic, this is in a lot of ways just a love letter to assassin films in general, because you've pulled assassin types from just about every movie I can think of and just dropped all of them onto the same train.
Yeah. And like, you know, they've got a good collection. I just wish it was like more and more overt and more like, and I don't like, I can see a tiny sliver of Quentin Tarantino here. Like, they should have had someone in a bike, like a yellow bike outfit, if they want to hit that one like hard. But what I see is not only the things that influence Tarantino, but more specifically, and it's funny that Brad Pitt's here, it's a Guy Ritchie film.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't see Tarantino as much as I see Guy Ritchie. And those are very different kinds of like clever dialogue. And Tarantino films stop so that characters can have dialogue. Whereas in a Guy Ritchie film, the dialogue acts as transition points and like sinew between action moments. And it can be like a single line or an entire like section of dialogue between some characters that just breaks up the action. They use them very differently because, of course, Guy Ritchie is far more kinetic overall, while Quentin Tarantino builds tension and like energetic potential and then fucking explodes in a moment. And that moment lasts about 20 minutes. And then the film goes back to nothing for 45 minutes. Nothing but like dialogue and such. Yeah. This is definitely a Guy Ritchie movie in that sense, I feel, and referring to far more to that, especially with Lemon and Tangerine.
Yep. That's exactly where I was waiting to go.
Yeah, it's too like it. I want to say it's too obvious, except we haven't had the return of the stereotypical Guy Ritchie duo of half decent morons. Like we it's been a while. They've kind of been off, you know, like being semi-retired as a concept. So it was nice to see the half competent morons back. It's yay, go Team Rocket.
Yeah, like with Lemon and Tangerine, I was just sitting there for a lot of their scenes going. Now, the most recent Guy Ritchie mob film that I'd seen was The Gentleman, and I'm sitting there going, y'all were just plucked, like, directly out of The Gentleman, or maybe Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh, or maybe Snatch.
Just straight in.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, we could go with Snatch just because of Brad Pitt.
Well, yeah, and that was my first thought, because actually I ended up seeing, when I was younger, I saw Snatch before I saw Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. It was the first DVD I ever saw. Yay.
Nice.
I think that and Sicario. No, not Sicario. Anyway, ignore that one. It's definitely a love letter to that, but of course it's as well a love letter to, they say 90s, but I want to say more 2000s, Hong Kong, Korean, and Japanese, action flicks. And not only that, but, this definitely counts as, post John Wick referential culture. Because there's no way in hell the White Death is not supposed to be Baba Yaga.
Oh, no. Like, this is, and considering a lot of the people behind it, not that surprising. This is almost John Wick and Deadpool put in a blender.
Yeah.
And then dropped on a train.
Of course, later on in the film, there's a blink and you miss it cameo from Ryan Reynolds as one of these characters. And
yeah,
that worked. That was great. That was wonderful. I'm just shocked, amazed, and disappointed that no point did Keanu appear as like a ticket taker or something. Like, you don't get Keanu to stress himself and fight in anything. Have him like under 80 pounds of makeup play an old man or something.
Well, I mean, with the amount of actual cameos in the movie, yeah, you're right. I'm surprised Keanu doesn't show up for a minute or two.
Yeah.
But with Ryan Reynolds specifically, I'm pretty sure that Deadpool 2 is why that cameo happened.
And that makes sense. Yeah. So that was filmed years ago at this point.
Pretty much, yeah. But Brad Pitt actually does have a blink and you'll miss it, and I mean that literally.
Oh yes,
cameo in Deadpool 2.
Ah, so this was and that was definitely a moment of like, I think it was that fucking Brad Pitt? How the hell did Brad Pitt end up in this movie? It's like, okay, now I see if these were like converging projects at some point, like ships passing in the night, and they both like pulled their pants down and mooned each other as they went.
Well, yeah, like I think it was they had the idea for the Brad Pitt cameo in Deadpool 2, but they were like, yeah, Brad Pitt will never do it. But then I think Ryan Reynolds probably told him what the joke was, and he was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And then Bullet Train comes up. So Pitt probably contacted Ryan Reynolds and just like, hey, I did the cameo for you. Can you do me a favor?
Where is that?
And then add in this being directed by David Leitch, who also did Deadpool 2.
Yeah, which is the obvious.
The connections
like,
just work.
Yeah. It's kind of difficult to miss the obvious visual aspects of it. It looks like Deadpool 2. It looks like Deadpool and Deadpool 2.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's just, well, that certainly, you know, I was almost expecting nods to a greater or larger world in this, because it feels like it exists in some sort of a larger cinematic universe because of all the nods. Like, you've got the two idiots from Lock, Stock, and Smoking Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. You've got Brad Pitt playing just like a schlub, like a professional criminal schlub.
Yeah, I think he's playing a combination of previous Brad Pitt characters.
Yes, yeah. And because, yeah.
In the trailers and with a lot of his dialogue, I was getting a real sense of Rusty from the Ocean's 11 series.
Mm-hmm. But like if he was instead of being like suave and debonair and shit, he was just kind of, he wears a bucket hat and oversized black rim glasses.
Yeah, like I think it's like Rusty's dialogue, but with the wardrobe and the visual character of probably either his character from The Mexican or just like something around that time period.
Yeah, a lot of Mexican comes to mind in this, and I don't know why, because it's not like there's much connection, but I guess it's a spiritual sequel to it. You can feel it coming through.
Yeah, I think there's probably a bit of that. And I think, again, just the look of the characters really giving you that sense.
Yeah. Then on top of that, you've got the big bad, the White Death, who is, as we said, kind of put forward somewhat as a John Wick. Like, the way that it's portrayed, it's like they're an unstoppable monster who wears a beautiful suit, and they came from Russia, the Ural areas, and murdered everyone. And it's like, okay,
and make no mistake, we do mean everyone.
And we'll get into who he's played by later, because I just don't want to spoil that too soon. But ooh, very fun.
Yeah.
There's three generations of characters. There's the victim child, the father, and then the grandfather, played by the always incredible Hiroyuki Sanada. Holy shit, it's another excuse to say Hiroyuki Sanada fuck around with a katana. That's all I want. That's all I want in life. I love that you know, it's anytime you can force him into a film for no good fucking reason, do it. I applaud Endgame for just being like, Hiroyuki Sanada, here we go. Westworld season 3, everyone hates it except for me. You know what it has? Hiroyuki Sanada. Fuck you.
Yeah, like Westworld season 3 was enjoyable, and I
damn right it was.
But also I don't know if you've heard this, but if Hollywood is listening to social media, there have been calls for him to be put into another franchise. Because with the success of Prey, which, quick reminder, will be our next review.
Oh God,
people are calling for, yeah. This is going exactly where you think it's going, because people are calling for Predator versus a samurai.
And make it, shoot it in black and white.
And after his performance here,
yeah.
Yes. After his performance here, people are calling for Hiroyuki Sanada to be the main character in this theoretical movie.
Yes. Oh, I don't even, like, please, by God, make it. But even the idea of it, and it just, like, perpetuates itself. Shoot the whole thing in black and white, just like Seven Samurai and all those classic fucking samurai films. Except for blood and cherry blossoms. Those are the only things. Blood.
Yes.
Oh, and I guess the Predator vision. But blood and cherry blossoms are all he sees in color. And have the whole thing scored by, you know, like, traditional Japanese instruments, and be 4 fucking hours long and have 5 lines of dialogue in total.
Oh, yeah. And, like, now where I heard this on a Facebook post. Obviously, I don't know how.
Oh, I'm sure it's bullshit,
is,
but.
Oh yeah, no. I was like, I don't know how, if this everyone is calling for this is actually everyone is calling for this, but
I'm calling for it. I demand it. Anyway, he's on a quest for revenge, and there's various other characters who come and go rather quickly or not. There's a Mexican assassin who the wolf, was it not? Yes, the wolf.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant medical assassin who congeals your blood and makes it pour out of every orifice. There's, of course, like, the reference to Leon the Professional with, I can't remember her name.
Prince.
Yes, Prince. But she's really fucking insufferable. So insufferable.
Yeah.
I the only thing that is missing from this movie is more, because they're on the right footing. They're on the right footing. Now just give me more in it. I want to see outlandishness. I want this to end with Jet Li being thrown through a window into the train, gets up just in time to get kicked out a window, and that's his cameo. Like, I want everyone to fucking appear in this as some fucking cliche that they have played. I want there to have been a cowboy for no good goddamn reason. Just like, and I'm the cowboy one, and then like the train explodes and they before they do anything. I want so much. I want an Irish gang trying to climb on top of the train as it fucking goes around Japan at like 300 miles per hour. Yakuza doing it or what have. I know, but it needs to be the, like, Yakuza hanging on to the side of a bullet train. That makes sense. We've seen that, you know, in the Wolverine. It's a great action cliche, and it's culturally appropriate, you know, for Japan, in the sense of they're both from Japan. Having a bunch of like Irish mobsters hanging onto the side of this thing, racketing through fucking like cherry blossom fields and behind like around like Mount Fuji, and they're just like screaming Irish obscenities. That's fucking funny.
Yeah. Oh no, what I was actually going to say was that at one point you do kind of, sort of, almost get that in that. Mm. There is that one moment where Tangerine ends up getting kicked off the train.
Yeah.
And gets back on by running down a bullet train.
Which, like...
And then jumping back on and basically headbutting his way through the windshield.
No, he's got brass knuckles.
Oh, is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah, it took a moment because it's like, how are you punching through that? Oh, wait, you've got brass knuckles. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering about that in theater because, yeah, I didn't see brass knuckles. But at the same time, yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, that moment is very much the, this is where you decide if you're on board with this movie moment.
Yeah. And if someone quickly, while like it just leaves the station, catching up to a bullet train, if I recall, is too outlandish for you, then the collection of coincidences and segment of clearly written backward Rube Goldberg situations that this film is will probably make you piss yourself in anger. So you probably should just stop right now, because this film was definitely written backwards. It's that kind of coincidence. It's not like you can see things coming foreshadowed necessarily, and then you can work it out yourself and you can outthink this movie. This is a smart movie that wants you to not think about it. It just wants you to lean back and have fun. It doesn't want you to necessarily engage with trying to figure out the mechanism. It tells you the mechanism, and then you sit back and watch that mechanism in motion.
Oh, yeah. Or if you're someone like me who just gets fascinated with coincidence in general and loves kind of just looking back and just seeing all the events from point A to point B, this was heaven.
Yeah. And like, it's good. It's well done. It executes every single one of them very well. It's just, I guess, for me, it's a little too passive in that regard.
Yeah.
Because, like, for films like Everything Everywhere All at Once, it kind of makes you reflect on yourself and consider all of this for your own perspective and everything. This doesn't. Like, all of these coincidences and oddities and fate-based things center around a couple of main characters. It's not like this overall reality of everyone. It's Brad Pitt's character and the White Death and Sonata. Like, that's where the confluences of coincidences occur. And they mostly focus on Brad Pitt's character, Ladybug. And the film goes into this beautiful explanation that, like, it's not that ladybugs are lucky. It's that they're kind of like a gravity well for other people's bad luck. And so having a ladybug around you is lucky for you.
Yeah.
Not so much for the ladybug. And it's like, and that's why all of these bizarre coincidences occur around him, because he essentially, like, just draws negative probability. And that would have been so cool if it wasn't so passive. Like, if they had given it to us instead of in the transition between the second act and the third act, if they had given it to us in the transition from the first act to the second act, and so you start seeing events as that, instead of like having them, philosophically, it would be a more engaging film. But again, I don't think this film necessarily wants you to be actively thinking and working. It wants you to sit back and enjoy the car crash and then go, well, that was neato burrito. And by all means, it's very good at that. I have to definitely contextualize all this, because I'm saying this movie gets an A. It, however, is in class with the A+ honor student known as Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I am broken because of that bell curve. I can't recognize a decently great film anymore. There is only perfection and mediocrity.
Well, I think, like, for me, I can't do those two absolutes. Like, I was just thinking about this as you were talking there, and it occurred to me that if I remember right, when we reviewed Everything Everywhere All at Once, we described it as kind of that more advanced, like we said, master class in like philosophy, chaos theory, and all that. What I would suggest is the Bullet Train is part one of a double feature.
I would actually give it a tiny little bit more than that. I don't think it's like 101 chaos theory and stuff like that. I think it's actually like 201. So say you have your university degree in mind-bending like action films and what have you, or chaos theory and like existentialism in action films. This would be second to third year. I think you have to understand stuff to apply it at this point. 101 chaos theory is definitely Jurassic Park. Like, that's 101. Ooh. Yeah.
Well, I think my analogy would still work in that it would just now be a triple feature.
Exactly.
You start with Jurassic Park, this is middle, and if you've gotten through this and you're good to go, then now you're ready for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Exactly. It's not as simple as Jurassic Park, where, you know, like the droplet on the hand, and like you set up an amusement park and it fails, which is an introduction to chaos theory. That is essentially one chaotic element writ large, and you watch the system collapse. This is like, so instead of this one big collapse, we're going to see a bunch of collapses constantly and how those collapses tie in. So yeah, this is from first to second level. And then from there, you can be like, now, what the fuck does any of that mean on a metaphysical quantum level in which all of those collapses and not collapses, every instance where something did not collapse, generates mathematically a separate dimension where they all occur at once. Therefore, fuck. It's, beginner's medium and hard level chaos theory. I like that. We could make a trilogy of it. Yeah.
Now, if you need a chain of events smaller than what Crash described, I'll give you my trip to the theater to see this movie because it will still work. like now I will be the first to tell you that Frank, right now money is kind of tight for me. So I filled up my water bottle and packed that because I just assumed that I wasn't going to be able to pay for like drinks or snacks at the movie or nothing. So by the time I finally left the apartment, turned out my bus was going to be arriving in 2 minutes.
Hmm.
So I decided instead I was going to walk down to Tacoma Drive and grab a bus from there over to Dartmouth Crossing.
Hmm.
So because I did that, that meant that I was walking down Main Street, and as I was walking down Main Street, I looked down at just the right time and find two $5 bills.
Nice.
Nice, yeah. And so I finally get there. I get on the bus, and I'm like, okay, instead of getting off the theater, I'm going to get off at the Dollarama so I can get some pop there. Because I did that instead, I went in, got my pop, walked over to the theater as fast as I could. And because I did it in that order, I walked in about 2/3 of the way through the pre-movie commercials. So out of the 15-minute pre-show, I got maybe 5 minutes and then trailers.
Not bad. It's a good thing to avoid.
Oh, amen to that.
They try, and I respect them for trying. They tried harder when they actually hired host for it anyway. But they fired them because they thought they were going to be bought by a British conglomerate. And then COVID happened and the industry almost collapsed. So now Cineplex is just sitting there being like, yeah, I guess we're still showing movies to you fucking assholes.
Again, particular chain of events.
Yeah. No, I love it. That's fantastic. I've gotten so used to it. I like to call myself one of God's own golden idiots because good things happen to me and I don't know why. I am Gladstone Gander. I do. I don't know how many times I've found a $5 bill on the ground. I don't know. It's so fucking common. Oh god, so I completely like, I love that feeling of just like, I don't know how this happened, but yay.
Oh yeah. And I mean like if we had time for me to really go into it, I can sit here and say I am on this show because I decided to start watching Doctor Who 12 years ago, and that chain would work.
Yep. Yeah, no, like, if you start working back on anything, trust me, it becomes incredibly convoluted and terrifyingly hilariously fun. I suggest you do it with any, moment or issue in your life. Why did you buy that car? Well, because 25 years ago, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, you have no sweet fucking clue. The best way to describe this kind of chain of events, aside from like Rube Goldberg, because if you don't know what that means, then you, fuck. So there's a general like maximum size for satellites that we can put into space. You don't get satellites larger than this without having to be pieced together, right? So that limits the basic size of things in orbit around our planet, and that also limits like the type of orbital garbage we have, and creates a problem because you can make a bunch of really small satellites and that just clogs up the orbit and it can be difficult to launch. If we had larger satellites, you could space them out, easier to avoid, there'd be less orbital pollution, et cetera, et cetera. Why am I talking about orbiting satellite sizes? Well, because they have to be able to fit in a rocket. Seems logical, right?
Yeah.
Rocket design, sizing, and all of that is based entirely around a system of measurements that were devised to fit on and around the train systems of America and Germany. Like, the reason why they're that shape size is because they are transported traditionally on trains. And so they had to be, like, able to fit on the back of a train, even if taken apart. And even if you look at how they got them up to the launch assembly, it was on a track that was measured according to the specifications and then writ large of a train. How the fuck do you end up with the size of a train track? Well, it's based on the size of European roadways. What are European roadways based on? The Roman system of an axle length, which is a legal size and existed for over 1,000 years as like a strict measurement. You had to have an axle this size. You can have a couple of variations, but your axle basically had to be this size. And that was determined based entirely on the size of access routes in and out of the city of Rome and between its buildings. So the size of someone's fucking side street in ancient Rome, because they built a house a few feet this way and not that way, is why there is now orbital fucking junk. That's how fucking crazy shit can get. And that's just one aspect. That's why I studied history. Because if you want to go crazy, try figuring out why shit happens. Anything. And it just becomes this incredible clusterfuck of complexity. And I really like this film for that. I just wish it then, like, took that existential step and was like, therefore, and it just doesn't, which is not a kick against it. This is a summer movie, not a spring movie. Spring movies are meant for thinking. Summer movies are meant for drinking.
Yeah, and, like, to be perfectly frank, would it have been nice if they had taken that extra step? Yes. Considering we also do have Everything Everywhere All at Once this year, did it need to take that extra step?
No.
Not really.
And that's why I'm absolutely not saying, like, don't see this movie. You will have fun.
It is
great. It is wonderful. You don't need to understand its concepts to enjoy it, because it's got bang, bang, shooty, shooty, and great performances.
Oh, yeah. I mean, quite frankly, understanding or not, if you were even just fascinated by the conversation that Crash and I just had, this is the movie for you.
Yeah.
Because where my brain went after watching this movie is what started this whole thing.
And, like, speaking also of Everything Everywhere All at Once, there's like little elements of it. Now, I'm not saying it was this was written well before that movie was released. The writers of this and the writers of that did not compare notes or anything, but it's fascinating that there's, like, tiny little, like, cliches that fold through as well. And they're used towards the climax. Like, they add towards the climax of Everything Everywhere All at Once, and it has meaning. Whereas in this, it doesn't. And it's just a shame, because it seemed like they were so foreshadowing, and they actually got to the thing and then they abruptly, like, turned away from it. And that is Lemon's obsession with Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah. That it would have been nice if they'd done more with that.
Yeah. Like, it's brought up more than enough. It's brought up a ton. And he goes over it a few times saying, like, it's not about the actual show. It's about, like, what it tells you about people and how to judge people in situations, stuff like that. And at the end of the film, or near the end of the film, in the climax, he gets his hands on the control stick of a runaway bullet train. And that should have been, like, his character defining moment where he can apply his obsession and everything that goes into it in some form. And I mean, like, not just technical, but it would be like a completion of his character arc. There would be a moral evolution or something there. His choice at the conductor's stick would result in the overall victory of good in this random chaos. Like, that's how that probably should have gone. Instead, he goes, fuck, I don't know. You take care of it. And is promptly thrown / throws himself along with a bad guy off the train. And it's like, and he's out of the movie. He was about to have character fulfillment. What the hell, man?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Like, on the one hand, the whole Thomas the Tank Engine obsession is very well applied in terms of his interactions with other characters. And like in that sense, it does work in terms of, like, advancing the plot and developing his character. But going back to what you were talking about in terms of wishing that this movie could have done more.
Yeah.
Then I you're absolutely right there.
Yeah, there's tons of setup. There's so much setup. You're just like, yes, 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 yes. And then there's no payoff. It's like, oh, fuck off. You know, the setup with the mascot in the children's car, who is always a little more aggressive before yeah. you get the reveal of who it is. And it only takes a couple of moments to get the suspicion that, like, that's someone else. That's why you're not seeing it. And they're being super aggressive only to the assassins. This is going to obviously pay off, and it does, but then that payoff is, like, immediately robbed by having that character die within 2-3 minutes of that moment, like, in the same scene that their face is finally revealed. And it's like, fuck off. You know, it's I can't remember the performer, but I'm pretty sure it's Domino from Deadpool 2.
Yeah, it was. It was Zazie Beetz.
Zazie Beetz. How the hell do I forget a name like Zazie Beetz? Plus, I love her in Deadpool 2. She's fantastic. And I guess why I'm a little frustrated, because it's like, you brought Zazie Beetz in and then you just, like, dispatched her immediately. I guess it plays into my Jet Li in and out, but, like, aw. That was mostly for Jet Li's sake, because he's retired. Zazie Beetz is in her prime. Get her working.
Oh, I'm into that. And also in terms of characters that are briefly seen, but you wish that there was more of them. Masioka as the conductor.
Yes.
Who was everybody's favorite thing from season one of Heroes.
I never watched Heroes, but I do know. I know two things. I guess three things. Save the Cheerleader. Everyone loves his character. And Skylar is the bad guy. Siler?
Well, Siler, yeah.
Siler's the bad guy. Yeah, anyway. Like I said, I didn't fucking watch it. Thank you for Heroes for giving us Zachary Quinto. You may leave now.
Yeah, I mean, I would say check out Heroes, but stop after season one.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, why? It was one of those shows made at the time when, like, people weren't making comic book content on the same level. You had to make it ironically or, like, postmodernly like that, where you're like, no, we're, like, we're not doing comic books. We're doing a serious take on what would happen if people got superpowers. Perhaps you have seen Unbroken. And it's like, yeah, great.
Unbreakable?
Perhaps you have seen Unbreakable. Yeah, it's like, yeah, great. Okay, but you know what I really want after, like, Unbreakable and Heroes is for all of you to slap on some fucking spandex and go fight each other. Do it! Fight for my entertainment!
I think to an extent you could almost say Heroes walked so something like The Boys could run. Because it's that same concept of superheroes in the real world.
This is true, but The Boys was a comic first, so although...
But if I remember the timeline-wise, even in comic form, I believe The Boys started its comic book run after Heroes had finished.
Yeah, I believe it started in 2006 or 2006 to 2008, possibly something like that. Yeah. No, I completely
yeah. Heroes
I completely
started in
that,
2006.
Yeah. I can completely believe that.
But I was also going to suggest that the show I think also would have worked better if they had stayed with the original anthology plan.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been smart. Instead of just like ending up bitching out and going the chase the lost route. It's like, no, we'll approach it like Lost. Who the fuck cares what plot is? Mystery.
Yeah. One thing that I did want to mention, just to get back to Bullet Train and its love of assassins and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but I think anyone are looking forward to seeing Bad Bunny in the upcoming El Muerte. You should probably be worried.
Yeah, that was a real, like, everyone else is having fun and giving a tongue-in-cheek performance, like they're in on the joke. He just comes off so serious that, like, I almost expected it to be him to be a Breaking Bad villain who is intentionally introduced as so overly serious and then gets like killed off by an actual fascinating, vicious villain. I like that he dies so early because God.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. I was going to say me too. Cause like, he was just, it seemed like he was so focused on trying so hard to be Antonio Banderas in Desperado.
Which is funny because, like, I'm a big fan of the El Mariachi series.
Yeah.
I fucking love El Mariachi.
Oh, and, so do I.
My initial thought seeing him, of course, was, oh, maybe it's El Mariachi, kind of. El Mariachi was not an asshole. Like,
no.
This guy's an asshole. Like,
he's trying so hard to do that character. It's not just a bad impression.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's not doing anything else.
Yeah, and like, he's trying to give an impression, but like, you don't even have a guitar. So the connection is half there, but
yeah.
You're not giving the full, you need that element to make it like really work. Otherwise, it's just like a generic action movie Mexican tough 17. The stylish one. It's closer.
His swagger. His swagger is so terrible.
I know. It's funny. It's like you're not El Mariachi and you're not John Leguizamo in Romeo plus Juliet. What the fuck are you? Yeah, either of those would have been great. If they had gone over swagger right into John Leguizamo in Romeo plus Juliet, holy fucking shit, that would have been hilarious. Like, insufferably in every character's face, swagger machismo. That would have been great. The half-ass smoldering, it just doesn't work. I'm sorry. It doesn't. Antonio Banderas can do that. And it's because you get the feeling that like a little child could walk up to smoldering Antonio Banderas and like Antonio Banderas would help him find his like get the child's kitten out of a tree. This guy would tell the kitten to fuck off and shoot the child.
Frankly, for me, I find it interesting that you say that he was half-assed because his performance, it's almost, there's a clip from The Simpsons where it's Bart and Lisa are just looking at Homer like, Frank, we miss your half-assed parenting. This is getting scary. And Homer's going, oh, but I'm using my whole ass.
That's the funny thing is
I could see El Mariachi fans as Bart and Lisa in this scene.
That I mean, I don't see it as like doubling down and giving too much of her performance. I see it as not being nuanced enough for El Mariachi. You can have the intensity and the threat. You need to have another level of heart. And like emotion, and he didn't have he just had anger.
No, he absolutely did not. And I would suggest that it's actually both, in that he has no nuance whatsoever because he's trying so hard to do someone else's character, and holy God, is it not working?
Yeah, and it's weird because. You don't have to overact for El Mariachi. You don't. Just be cool about shit. You know, be passionate and smolder and brooding, and that's it. You don't have to be a tough guy. El Mariachi was never a tough guy. He carried around a fucking guitar and played, you know, like music in taverns and cafes. His persona was not tough guy. It was like ripped off the cover of Harley Quinn Romance, but with a guitar gun. You know, I like to think of, so this guy was taking it fucking serious as a serious gangster assassin film. And El Mariachi owes much more to Latin soap operas. And there's frankly, no element of that.
It really does.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you just sit down at the TV for a minute and clear your head?
Okay. But for just a moment.
Guess what? Monsignor Martinez rented a sports car in the name of those little babies.
Vaya con Dios.
Now that of course takes us to the reveal of the White Death, because I want to get to it. It's a great shocking performance of like, wait, is that why? It's Michael Shannon. Why? I'm not complaining, but why? Michael Shannon? What? Okay. All right. What? Okay.
Oh yeah, it was one of those. As with much of this movie, on the surface, it doesn't make sense.
No.
But like you said, you just look at him and you're kind of going, all right, yeah, I'll go with it.
Yeah, I implicitly as an actor, I implicitly trust Michael Shannon as an actor due to his terrific deadpan sense of humor. Google Flipper Hands if you ever want some fun. And the second I recognized him under that wig, my brain immediately went, he chose that wig.
he probably did. To be perfectly honest, with a lot of his performance, like it was a great performance, I almost wish he had gone more full his General Zod.
Yeah, that would have been fascinating because he's definitely very reserved in this until the very end, and it works with the character, but he's so not that character that you needed it to go a lot harder, a lot faster. And yeah, having him break down into like General Zod levels of, you know, that would have been fantastic. As it is, he's doing a lot of like Keanu. And when Keanu's angry, Keanu doesn't yell at you until everything has done gone fucked up and it's too late to fix anything. That's when Keanu yells at you.
Well, and also, let's be honest, when Keanu played a samurai, it didn't really work either.
Oh, God. At some point, we should watch that because it is so bad. We should do a one bad samurai film, that one. One mediocre, yeah. And all Hollywood ones. We'll do a Japanese series later of actual good stuff. But one terrible Hollywood samurai film, one mediocre with problems samurai film, that would be The Last Samurai. And then one brilliant, fantastic one. And I don't even know which one it would be right now.
Oh, yeah, no, that would be interesting to figure out. And
the Whitaker, Forrest Whitaker film,
Ghost Dog, true, yeah,
which is, of course, possibly the only good Hollywood samurai film.
Actually, yeah, and if you think about it, is Ghost Dog even really a Hollywood samurai film?
I mean, that's getting as close as I can. Oh, an American, yeah, samurai film. Yeah. I mean, at this point,
just thinking of how much of an indie film Ghost Dog is.
That's true. It is. It absolutely is. But yeah, I guess I mean in terms of like Western American media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but and actually also with the character of the White Death. Even in the pure insanity of this movie, they actually still managed to pull off a plot hole that made me go, wait, hold on, what?
Ooh, do tell.
And I will admit that there's probably a degree of me nitpicking here, but that for me, like, this just came off odd.
Mm.
In that there's a scene where Hiroyuki Sanada's the elder is talking about how, like, the White Death is his enemy, but the White Death does not know that he's on that train.
Mm.
But then later on, the White Death, if I remember, it comes on the loudspeakers in the train, and at one point mentions how he bought every single ticket on the train to ensure that the people that he wanted on the train, or at least who he thought were the people he wanted on the train, would all be there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's... And that's... I think a function of that passive issue I was talking about, where, like,
yeah,
if it had been a tiny bit more connected and like foreshadowable, you would have seen that issue and it would have been corrected. It should have been something that you could figure out as a viewer. However, this film wants you to be a passive audience and just sit back and enjoy it. You know, like, don't overthink it. Don't try to detective out the elements before. Just let it happen. Let it wash over you. And it leads to tiny issues like that. That, like, if you think about it, you start seeing that these pieces don't necessarily connect, because, again, it was written probably backwards to try to make it work. Yeah. And so you end up with issues like that where it's like, shit. They could have been fixed by anything as easy as, like, having him buy a ticket under one of the false names that the White Death bought it under, or slip onto the train illegally. There are ways around it. Yeah.
Quite frankly, let's be honest. Just the scene of Sonata illegally slipping onto the train, the way that he's playing the elder everywhere else in the movie, you got to admit, that would have been kind of amazing.
Oh, it would have been fantastic. Absolutely. It would have ruined its kind of reveal of him, but that would have, like, again, that give this script another go, front and back, and see how tighter it can become. Not necessarily in runtime. It's a good runtime. I mean, getting those elements to tie to each other in a way that if you're really fucking on the ball, or if you're watching it a second time, you can see the catastrophe before it happens.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, the woman in the quiet car who kept shushing Ladybug and Lemon during their fight, they set her up.
Yes.
And she's not even any kind of really contributing character.
Exactly. It's tiny little elements like that where they give stuff and then don't do anything. You brought it up just before recording. There's a cameo in this by I can't remember her name, but from The Boys again. The Boys is coming back.
I just had it up here. Karen Fukuhara.
Yeah, and so she plays the female on The Boys.
Kimiko.
Yeah, I know it's Kimiko now, but the female.
Fair.
And
so I just threw that because I have IMDb up in front of me.
Fair enough. Yeah, in the original comic run, the character is simply known as the female. Like, the female of the species is the more deadly is what it's a reference to. It's a saying about nature.
Yeah.
But she's fantastic. If you want to see some great performances, they finally give her character some character this season, aside from, like, tragic. She gets to have a bunch of dance fight sequences in season 3 of The Boys, and she just gives it her all, and she's great. And you see her show up in this, and you're like, oh, shit's about to go down. And no. She's, I guess, dead at the end of the movie, just like everyone else on the train, but there's nothing. She has a food cart. And she's, like, handing out sparkling water. And Brad Pitt's like, yeah. Do you have anything sparkling? She should have seltzered him at some point. She should have been throwing fucking, you know, like, items from the food cart. And then it eventually pulls out, like, a full set of knives. Or, like, she comes out with mini gin bottles on her between her knuckles. And then smashes them both. And they're, like, claws. And it's like... there's options here, and nowhere does it, like, it doesn't go anywhere. It never comes back. There's, if every ticket on this train was bought by the White Death, who is that woman shushing them? Is she a fucking murderer too? It would have been great if, like, she was called, like the Silent Killer or something, and she, like, sneaks up behind people. No, nothing. It's just, A, but not A plus. A but not A plus.
Oh, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think there is a degree of at what point are you creating too many assassin characters? Like, you're right. I don't think the movie really did, like, quite enough of them.
Yeah, and I again will stress that when it comes to your climax, Wong, you're wrong. Always more. You cabin in the woods the shit. And you have hundreds. You have people going, oh my god, it's, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. But you wait till the very end for that.
Oh, yeah, totally. Oh, also, there is another Simpsons clip that I just thought of. There was that scene of it's the mob and the Yakuza. fighting it out.
He's gonna do something. Front. No.
Yeah.
What? Oddly enough, I thought of that character earlier while watching this. And it was just like, yeah. That would have been great if there was just one character who, like, was super fucking good, but you never got to see. You know, like, that would have actually been a hilarious way of doing the White Death, is just all references to John Wick, but you never actually see him in action, ever. You just cut to the aftermath.
Well, I think the character of Kimura, the father, was kind of, at least along that line, where, like, you get the sense that this guy is a powerful, pretty skilled hitman. But he's been on the booze so much.
Yeah, and there's the thing is, like, with that character, you want to see him in action. There's a grace and a dance to it, you know?
Yeah.
With someone like the White Death, who you don't even see their face for the majority of the film, it already is telegraphing that, you know, you're not going to get to see all of the violence here. And that would have been just a great way of saying how dangerous, how scary, impactful he is. So you could have one be super slow and violent and the other so fast you don't even see it. Good, like, oppositional themes. But again, that's on the next pass of the script.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Or, heck, maybe if we get very, very lucky, a sequel.
Yeah, I can see how they would sequelize this, but I can also see how it would not go the way I want. Like,
yeah,
you know, what they should do is a Benoit Blanc mystery, where it's like, here's your basic setup, but it's a completely different situation and characters now. But they would probably put Brad Pitt on another fucking train or a plane or something. And you'd have Samuel Jackson be the villain. And there'd be another snake. And he'd get into saying the line, which would be a reference to Snakes on a Plane. And then, like, the cockpit window would blow out and he would be sucked out mid-line, which is a reference to Deep Blue Sea, I think.
Yeah.
So, like, you could double reference, but notice how cliche and easy to write that is. Please do not do that.
No, I think the only way that would really happen would be if the sequel was a case of the studio sitting down David Leitch and going, look, you made us money with this the first time. You're going to do another one. No, you're not understanding. You're going to do another one.
At least the name Red Eye has already been taken.
True.
Because, Bullet Train, Red Eye, and then Rush Hour, which, again, also taken.
Taken, yeah.
Taken, yeah. So, also taken.
Taken, also
taken. Also taken. Good movie. Potentially even a great movie. Fun. Tons of fun. However, at the end of the day, on its report card, it says, could do more if applied.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, yeah. Like, I'm prepared to pretty much guarantee you're going to have a great time. It's what you get out of this movie is essentially up to you. But at the same time, like you said, there could have been more.
Yeah, there could have been more. There isn't so little that you're going to have a problem with it. It works. It's fun. And seeing as how this is it's a film that has no connection whatsoever aside from, like, those involved and how they know each other to any comic book property or previous IP, technically. It is, therefore, a real movie, quote-unquote. So for this to have come out of practically nowhere and just be like, wow, that is a lot of fun, and it doesn't involve multiverses or, like, massive amounts of canon necessarily or like too much product placement, it's good, it's fun, you will enjoy it. Please by all means watch it. And then if you, like I, feel something is missing, go back and rewatch Everything Everywhere All at Once.
But, I mean, frankly, yeah. I mean, like we said earlier, that and this, there's a double feature here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would suggest this first, but yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, no, but between the two, this is absolutely the starter.
Yeah. Well, that was fun. I had fun. Did you have fun?
Oh, yeah, no, it's this was just such a great, enjoyable movie. Like, even if the plot was bad, a lot of the visual, live action, anime esque style in a lot of it, I would have been content with just that.
Absolutely, it pulled it off better than Netflix did. And if you agree, gentle, dear, wonderful listener, please let us know. Send us a comment. Like, share, subscribe. Give us an email detailing exactly why you love this film or hate us. Those are the only options. You either love the film or hate us personally. Send that to...
Or if, like me, you're willing to defend Netflix and the recent Mary Elizabeth Winstead movie Kate, which visually does have similarities to Bullet Train and is just as pretty to look at, and so is the visual style in Kate.
I don't even know that film. I was referring to Cowboy Bebop.
Oh, I had a feeling that was what you were going for, but I just wanted to throw that in because... I enjoy Kate, and I enjoy Mary Elizabeth Winstead. That's the sole extent of my logic here.
if Mary Elizabeth Winstead wants to get in touch with you, how does she do that?
Well, first of all, please, Lord, I have been very good over the last 42 years, so if you could make that happen. And if there is a God, who would be that kind? We can be reached at realgeekshfx@gmail.com, realgeekshfx on Twitter. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, if you're listening, I know you're married, but I'm going to make the pitch anyway. I can be found. I'm just like, how many ways can I run with this? I can be reached directly at the Merit Time Lord on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.
And I am available at Friday in Halifax on Twitter and Crash and Burn everywhere else. Mary, you know, you're decent. I like you in your work, but I'm not as much into you, so throw a bone to Mike.
Please, 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 please.
And until next time. Oh, wait, we got a special bonus episode coming out for you on Friday or Saturday, whenever I get it edited. So look for that more. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got extra B-roll coming. And if you're not entirely clear yet on what the hell has been happening with Batgirl, don't worry. We're going to be here to help you at the end of the week. And unlike most of the internet, we stuck with the stuff that's actually, you know, verifiable.
Yeah, so it's all boring and shit. check us out then. Until then, see ya!
Bye!